This is Jones Financial Talk with Nick Jones from Jones & Associates Premier Financial Solutions. When a part of your financial strategy is out of tune, your long-term goals, your retirement savings, and your legacy can all suffer. Nick provides his clients and prospects with the information they need regarding Social Security, retirement income planning, wealth management, and much more. Listen in as we address your financial concerns and provide helpful solutions to put you on the path to achieving your retirement goals. And now, here is Jones Financial Talk with your host, Nick Jones.
Well, hello and welcome back to Jones Financial Talk. This is Nick Jones from Jones & Associates Premier Financial Solutions. Listeners, if you'd like more information about what you hear on this fine show today, you can get that information in two ways. You can go to our website, jonesfinancialtalk.com, or simply pick up the phone and give us a call here locally in the Rogue Valley at 541-500-4321. If you want to go to that radio page, you can listen to all the past shows, listen to all the hot topics, even ask us some questions about different shows that you'd like to, or topics for different shows that you'd like for us to take part in. And that's what brings me to the conversation today. We actually have a special guest, Mr. Tyler Ellegaard, portfolio manager from Gradient Investments, with my co-host Tony Shore. And we're going to be discussing interest rate movement today and what's going on in the interest rate world. Join me, fellas. How you doing?
Doing good. Doing good. Hey, that's a huge get, Nick, to get Tyler on the show. I love that.
Totally. Tyler's been working with me for many, many years with many client portfolios and always gives me lots of information to share with our current clients. But I thought it would be great to have him on and talk about this important topic today.
Yeah. I think this is going to be a great discussion, Nick, and I'm excited about it. Now, for all of our listeners and viewers out there, we do record the show and pre-record it before the weekend, and we're recording it on Election Day. It is Tuesday, November 5th. Hopefully everyone went out and voted. I know we were talking before the show. We all voted. And I'm excited about that a little bit. I'm more excited to just have this thing over with. I'm so sick of political ads and getting texts and emails. It's been driving me nuts lately.
I've had no less than like 10 text messages in the last day. It's How do they get our number?
Same. I have no idea, but I'm getting them from everyone. It's like there's no discernment. I'm getting Harris and Trump texts from both campaigns saying, and I mean, like, as of an hour ago, I got a text saying last chance to donate to our campaign. It's like, why would anyone right now send them money for this presidential campaign? I mean, it's too late. What are they going to, I mean, I guess to pay the bills that they've run up, but that's nuts. I don't see anybody giving money to them on Election Day, but maybe. I don't know how that works. So, Nick, how have you been?
Things are great. Yeah, this has been a great time of year. You know, the market has just done phenomenal for many, many people and many of our clients. But, you know, a lot of people have been asking me lately, because of what's going to happen tomorrow, right? The Federal Reserve meets again tomorrow, I believe. Where are interest rates? Where are they going? What do we really think about the interest rate environment? Because it has so much to do with our clients' portfolios and money on the sidelines. And so that has been a huge question that many people have been asking lately. And I just kind of wanted to throw that to Tyler, maybe to give us a backdrop of kind of where we're at in the interest rate world today to start, you know?
Yeah, that's great. And Nick, thanks for having me on. I always appreciate the partnership that we get to have throughout the years. But as far as where interest rates are today, you know, they're certainly a lot higher than they were a couple of years ago, right? If you remember, just post COVID, you know, short-term interest rates, oftentimes when we talk about interest rates, we're talking about the interest rate that you can get on a treasury. And so, you know, if you think back just a couple of years ago, they were effectively zero. And even for going out longer term, like a 10-year treasury, typically, if you're going to put your money into something for 10 years, you want to demand a higher payment. Right. And so that was effectively less than 1% at the time as well. So it was really interesting to see that happen a couple of years ago. Now, fast forward to today, you know, we've gone through this cycle of the Federal Reserve raising their policy rate, oftentimes referred to as the Fed funds rate, at the fastest rate that we've seen. And so now we're sitting at that point and interest rates are actually attractive now, right? You actually get paid to hold bonds, which is a very different scenario. There was a short period in 2018, 2019, where you could get paid a little bit, but really since the great financial crisis, you haven't been able to make money in bonds, at least from an income standpoint. So now today, it's a very different landscape where a 10-year treasury, that's kind of the benchmark rate that a lot of investors look at, is sitting at 4.3%, which means if you bought a 10-year treasury bond today, for the next 10 years, you're going to be getting 4.3%, which is fantastic for those who are in that saving mode, which oftentimes is the retiree or someone who's near retirement. So as far as, you know, where do we go from here? You know, it's a little bit different because when the Federal Reserve starts to cut interest rates, a lot of times people think about recession, right? At least from the people that I talk to, that's really what they start to think when the Federal Reserve cuts interest rates. You know, we don't see that happening. The economy is still very strong. And so the Federal Reserve last month began their interest rate cutting cycle. And it's not to signal a recession. It means that the economy is strong. They've tamed the inflation rate that we saw, right? It topped out at 9.1%. And so now they're trying to bring that policy rate back in line with more of a long-term average. So rather than sitting at 5.25%, we're going to bring it back. The Federal Reserve is projected to bring it back to about 3.5% by the end of 2025, so next year. So I think that's really where interest rates are going. We can dig into more of the details if you want on more of my outlook on specific areas of interest rates. But you know, the general consensus that interest rates are going to be coming down over the next couple of years.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting because, I mean, that's a pretty significant drop, you know, from where the 5% rate was, say a couple of months ago. So going down to maybe 3.5, like you mentioned. And I think that is why so many clients have reached out and wanted to talk to me about this specific situation, because, you know, for a period of maybe 9 to 12 months, we were right around that 5% mark in a risk-free asset. And, you know, they're like, well, now am I going to lose money? So how does that work, Tyler? Like, as rates go down, are they going to lose any of the principal in any type of portfolios, you know, because of those movements?
Yeah. So bonds actually have an inverse relationship with yields, which means if interest rates or yields go up, it means bond prices go down. And vice versa, if interest rates go down, it means bond prices go up. And the reason for that is if, you know, let's say I sell you a bond that pays a 4% coupon rate, and now all of a sudden you can get a bond at 5%, right? That 4% bond is no longer as attractive, right? Which pushes the price down. And then if you own that 4% bond and interest rates go down to 3%, all of a sudden that 4% is very attractive, right? And so the price goes up. So that's kind of the general dynamic of how bonds work. So in this environment where we expect bond yields or interest rates to come down, it means that longer term bonds, the price will generally go up. Now, if we look at kind of what we consider the yield curve, right? So on a yield curve, there's a 3-month treasury, a 6-month, 1 year, 2 year, 5, 7, 10, 20, and 30. So there's different dynamics that affect where those interest rates are. On the shorter end of interest rates, it's largely controlled by the Federal Reserve. So when the Federal Reserve changes their policy rate, oftentimes it's going to immediately affect a 3-month treasury or 6-month treasury because it's the borrowing rate. Now, on a longer term, like a 10-year, there's a lot more market dynamics that go on. And it's the 10-year interest rate it's more around what do we expect the growth of our economy to be in the future? What do we expect the inflation rate to be at? What do we expect the political party to be doing, who's in office, which may be timely right now, obviously. So there's a lot of different dynamics that go on the longer end of the interest rate curve versus what's going on in the shorter end of the interest rate curve. But to go back to your question, yes, when interest rates go down, it does not mean that you're going to lose principal. Generally speaking, if interest rates go down, it means you actually might get more principal value out of it.
Nice. Yeah, because you were paid more than what somebody can get today, basically. And so they want to pay you a little bit more as a result of that.
Exactly.
Okay. And so, you know, we talked about how the Federal Reserve meets, what, every 6 weeks or so to decide if they're going to raise rates, keep them the same or lower them. And so they're meeting tomorrow, which is interesting because we have an election today. A lot of people aren't sure if, you know, the way that the Federal Reserve determines if they're going to move rates has anything to do with politics or not. You know, what are the things that they could discuss, you know, that maybe could slow things down? I mean, you're right. This is such a unique time in the sense that we haven't put ourselves into a situation where we're going to have a recession. Hopefully the U.S. economy is pretty strong, but they need to get the rate back in line with inflation. So what are the things maybe they could get in their way and could lead people to think rates aren't going to go down for a while?
Yeah. So there's two key mandates that the Federal Reserve has. The first one is inflation. So if inflation is high, they're going to increase the interest rate or the policy rate to try to slow down the economy. Or vice versa, if the economy is slow and there's very little inflation, they might lower interest rates to encourage you to start borrowing money and spend more. So that's their number one policy. The second one is what they call full employment, meaning they want to have as many people employed in the economy as they possibly can. Now, there's oftentimes a range within the unemployment rate that, you know, you just can't get below because there's naturally going to be people, you know, moving jobs or a company's going to have layoffs no matter which type of economy you're in, whether it's a recession or a growth type of economy. There's always going to be that. So their other mandate is going to be full employment, making sure as many people are as employed as possible. So those are the two things that they're going to be talking about. Actually, today they start the meeting today, and then tomorrow they come out and let the open market or the public know about their decisions. So they're going to be talking about those two things throughout the next couple of days. And what we saw last Friday was a jobs report that was what I would call lackluster, but there's a lot of things in it that showed, you know, maybe we're not adding as many jobs as we possibly can, but there's a few things like the hurricane that affected that. There's currently a union strike at Boeing, right, that was affecting that. So there's some things that kind of skewed the jobs that we added in the month of September. October. We're in November now. What they're going to be talking about is, Do we trust that this number that the amount of jobs that we add is going to rebound this month? Do we think it's going to rebound in December, right? Are we going to continually add more jobs over that $100,000 mark? And if they think so, you know, maybe they feel that their rate is fine right now. If they think that we're not going to be able to add as many jobs as we possibly can, maybe they'll decide to lower that interest rate because that means that companies can borrow at a lower interest rate and potentially spend more on projects. The other thing is the inflation part. Obviously, inflation, it has come down from the 9.1%, which is fantastic, but it is by no means at their target rate of 2%, right? We're still above that. And we don't need to get into this today, but there's a number of different inflation rates that you can look at. You know, there's what we call PCE or CPI, or there's the real inflation, which is like the real time data. There's a number of different areas of inflation rates that you can look at, but the main one that they pay attention to is the PCE. For whatever reason, investors look at CPI. I don't know why, because we're talking about two different data points, but nonetheless, inflation still is not to their target, which means that they need to keep interest rates higher to try to bring that inflation rate down. So those are going to be the two things that they'll be talking about tomorrow. So as far as what could be that headwind, you know, I think if inflation does not or remains sticky, so it stays at, you know, that 2.5 to 2.75%, which we've seen for the last couple of months, if it stays sticky there, you could see them not have to lower interest rates as aggressively, because they want to try to tame or say that they want to tame that inflation rate. And then also, if we continue adding jobs at a faster pace than we expect, it means that they probably don't have to lower interest rates as fast as they were expecting to.
You know, you were talking about the different inflation indexes that people look at to determine inflation, right?
Yeah.
And the one I look at is my health insurance costs every year. So to me, inflation rate is at about 20% every year.
So. Well, and Tony, that's so interesting you actually mentioned that, because if you think about what's on the top of mind of most retirees, it's how much of a raise am I going to get in Social Security, which is like in the mid 2% this year, right? 2.5%. And then on top of that, what am I going to have to pay for increases in Medicare premiums, which is like 6% this year, right?
Right.
And so it's interesting how both of those numbers are kind of dictated by the government. They're going to pay us more on Social Security, but take more on Medicare. And, you know, those are the types of dynamics that can really irritate people, but is all tied into this whole conversation that we've got going today for sure.
Yeah, I just wanted to throw that out there. Kind of a joke, but kind of sad.
It's not a joke. You're right. I mean, it's unfortunate that
because the CPI is always like right now. It's like, oh, inflation rate's like 2.4, right? Yep. Or 2.5 maybe. Yep. And that's why the COLA, or the cost of living increase for Social Security, as you mentioned, is 2.5 next year, or 2.4. I forget. It's right in there. And I think, yeah, that CPI, you know, groceries and healthcare are not, if they looked at all, they'd have to just call it Blue Cross Blue Shield or one of the big companies and say, hey, how much did you increase Tony Shore's health insurance this from last year to this year? The standard 20%. Yeah.
Well, the other one that I throw out there is auto insurance and home insurance.
Home insurance. Those are locally.
Those are the other ones that have been up. I think it's like 40 or 50% in the last year and a half, something like that. So,
yeah.
Yeah. We deal with fires out here a lot, you know, and so many of my clients come in and say, I can't believe the increases that I've seen in my homeowner's insurance as a result of whatever the main reason is, you know? And yeah, that's a huge point when you're on a fixed income and you've got to deal with those types of increases with your bills. It's outrageous, you know? You know, Tyler, I was thinking about something else too. A lot of my clients, when they come in and they start I just talked to a client today. I did a review earlier today, and she had some extra money sitting in savings, you know, that she wasn't going to need for 6 to 9 months. And she's like, well, I don't even know if I can get more, but I mean, I'm getting like 0.25% in my savings account at the bank. Like, what all are the alternatives? And a lot of people don't realize, because when they look at what the banks do, like when interest rates went down 6 weeks ago, the banks just slashed rates very, very quickly, because I think they're worried, probably. They don't want to, you know, give you good interest. But the dynamic, I guess, what I'm asking you is between like what we can get in a very conservative money market portfolio today versus what a bank pays you for your savings account is a huge difference, you know? Yeah. And so what happens with that money? I mean, the bank just basically keeps that overnight, or how does that work?
Yeah. I mean, so obviously after 2008, banks were very hesitant to pay you anything. And part of that was interest rates were just so low. So the way banks make money is you put money into the bank, into a bank account, and they're able to go and lend that money out. And so typically what they do is oftentimes it's a mortgage, right? That's the primary demand, especially for retail people like us. You know, they're lending us to go buy a house for 30 years, and they know that they're going to get X percent, and they only have to pay you 0.01%, right? Now, that dynamic changed a little bit over the last, call it, year and a half as interest rates rose, because, you know, on a 3-month treasury, you could be getting, call it, 5.25%, somewhere in there, but the bank was still only paying you 0.01%. So in order to retain that money at the bank, because they need you to keep those deposits in their bank, otherwise they can't lend, right? And that's how they their money, is by lending. So unfortunately for them, fortunate for us, they had to raise their interest rates or their yields on their savings accounts and checking accounts. But it wasn't all that much, right? Now you're getting 0.25% instead of 0.01%, right? At the end of the day, unless if you have millions in the bank, it's really not going to make a difference. It's not going to put food on your table. So a lot of money left and went into what we call money market accounts, which are just investing in what we call ultra short-term bonds. Oftentimes it's 3-month treasuries or a treasury that was issued that comes due in a month. So it's usually 30, 60, or 90 day debt that is invested in these money market accounts. And so because the turnover is so fast in those, because it's only 30, 60, or 90 days, they add new debt securities in there, like a 3-month treasury or an investment grade bond that's paying a little bit higher yield. And so you get the actual yield of those bonds or the coupon payments of those bonds in those money market accounts. And so it's the open market way to stay with whatever true interest rate you have. And so that's the big difference is the banks don't want to be paying you the 5.25% because the rate that they're lending out, there's not enough a big enough spread on that for them to make
there's
money.
There's not enough margin, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And so when you look at we were talking about the yield curve earlier. And so when you were looking at the yield curve, a 3-month treasury was paying more on an annualized basis than a 10-year treasury. And so they can't get enough margin out of that to pay you what that shorter term interest rate is in your bank account. Because they obviously need to pay overhead costs that keep the bank alive for you to continue having your money at that bank. So they're very hesitant to increase what they pay you and very quick to slash it.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. And you know, with CDs, I saw that with my dad because he had some money that he got from his father when my grandfather passed away. And it's right when the Fed had been raising rates. And so banks were offering some for the first time in forever, actual decent rates on CDs. Right. So he's looking at that. And I remember you could get like 6% on an 18-month CD. Well, now that same bank of his, I went in there and to get even close to 4% or 4-something, it's down to 7 months. So the bank isn't willing to, it's like a 7-month CD to get 4%. You're still better off with a MIGA or an investment, but you know, it depends on the risk and when you need the money. But if you want to get a fixed rate for a long period of time, CDs are starting to be not appealing again. So it's interesting as the Fed lowers rates, I think we'll see that happen more and more. And of course, the checking and savings accounts, they've always been terrible. But even when interest rates went up, they weren't that great.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. And that's why I think a lot of clients bring it up to me and say, okay, do you have some type of alternative to a savings account? But what they're used to is that savings account is there when they need it. So it's very liquid, you know, and a lot of the CDs that are offered, especially locally here, have gone down so quickly and they still tie your money up for a long period of time that it doesn't give you the ability to take that money and either spend it or invest it in something else when you see a better opportunity. And so, you know, one of the reasons why I've worked closely with Tyler, especially recently, is because you know, he manages a money market portfolio, and not all money market portfolios are equal. That's another thing that I want our listeners to understand. There's lots of different dynamics that can happen and control the amount of return that you get, how your principal's protected, and things like that. And even just yesterday, I think I read that some of the largest money market portfolios today that are at very large banking institutions are not paying the dividends the way that they did, you know, previously. They decided that they're going to pay them maybe towards just the end of the month instead of a couple of times a month. And that's a huge difference. You know, if you're getting dividends constantly into a portfolio every single week or 2 weeks or month, then you're just building, right, more interest on the interest that you have, which is a huge advantage if you have a money market that does things correctly. So I thought I'd just point that out as well.
Yeah, and the other thing that I'd bring up is just our outlook on the Federal Reserve, because I think it's important when we're talking about money markets. And so I mentioned the 3.5%. And so by the end of 2025, and what that means for these money market accounts is that as the Federal Reserve continues their interest rate cut, it means that the income that you're going to be able to produce on these types of securities, these money market accounts, are going to come down because, like I said, they're ultra short term. They're 30, 60, and 90 days. And so as the Federal Reserve cuts by 0.25%, we're expecting 0.25% this month, 0.25% in December, and then a couple of more next year. It means that as every time they do that, it means that the income that you can produce off of these ultra short or money market bond products, it's going to come down eventually. right? Now there's a little bit of a lag to it, but that's where you and I have been working closely on this is how do we protect that income and not just lose it completely, right? There's other avenues within fixed income or bonds that you can generate that type of income or keep a similar level of income by taking on just a tiny bit more risk. Or if you want to exceed what you were making, there's ways that we can do that too. So that's, you know, for your listeners, that's one way that you and I've been working together is really just to identify those opportunities for you and your clients.
We only have about a minute or so left in the show. It's been great. We could talk for a long time. We'll have to have Tyler back on the show, right, Nick?
We definitely will.
Yeah. Tyler is a portfolio manager there at Gradient Investments, and it's one of the faster growing investment firms out there. It's quite large now, and you've been working with them for quite a while now, Nick, I know, and it's been great. Tyler, great to have you on the show. A lot of great knowledge and information. Before we go, Nick, is there anything else you want to say?
Just a couple of things, listeners. If you want to talk to us more about this specific topic or have any investment questions for us, you can reach out to us in a couple of different ways. You can just go to our website, jonesfinancialtalk.com. You can ask questions on there. You can listen to all of our radio shows and all the great content that people like Tyler and Tony and I create. Or you can just give us a call here locally. We're at 541-500-4321. Pretty easy number to remember, 500-4321.
All right. Sounds great. Thank you so much, Nick. And again, thank you, Tyler Ellegaard from Gradient Investments, for being on the show. Nick, good job. A huge get. And I think you're going to work on getting even more guests on the show. And we're going to have Tyler back at some point to continue this discussion and see what's going on with the markets. Probably sometime after the election. Once that settles down, we'll want to take a look at what's been happening, I'm sure. Well, hey, guys, great show. Listeners, thanks for tuning in. That does it for today's episode of Jones Financial Talk. Thank you for listening to Jones Financial Talk. Don't pay too much for taxes or retire without a sound income plan. For more information, please contact Nick Jones at Jones & Associates Premier Financial Solutions. Call 541-500-4321 or visit their website at jonesfinancialtalk.com. Fee-based financial planning and investment advisory services are offered by Jones & Associates Premier Financial Solutions, a registered investment advisor in the state of Oregon. Insurance products and services are offered through Jones & Associates Insurance Solutions. Jones & Associates Premier Financial Solutions and Jones & Associates Insurance Solutions are affiliated companies.
All matters discussed during the show are for informational purposes only. Each individual situation may vary, and the opinions expressed here may not apply to everyone. Materials presented are believed to be from reliable sources, and no representations can be made as to its accuracy. All ideas and information should be discussed in detail with one of our qualified representatives prior to implementation. We are not affiliated with or enforced by the Social Security Administration, the Federal Medicare Program, or any other government agency. Calling this number will direct you to a licensed sales agent.